All right, what's going on, gang? This is not a regular wine cellar episode. This one, Phoenix Kaleeder is having a conversation-style interview with Adrian Bracciali, running for the Attorney General in California right now. All right, so, and we thought it was just going to be like a 20-minute segment, but they ended up going for about 57 minutes, so this will be the entire episode. Trigger warning as usual, and let's get to it. All right.
Boom, all right. Oh, we didn't even do a decibel check, but that's okay.
I already did right. With the telephone. Oh. Her decibels are good.
Oh, well, all right then. Her decibels are good. So today we are hanging out with Adrian. It is Adrian, or is it Adrian?
It's Adrian. You got it right.
Okay. Because so, see, William had me like confused. He was like, Adriani? I was like, what? I don't think that's her name. And you got to pronounce your last name for me.
Yeah, that's okay. Nobody gets it. It's Bracciali.
I've been saying it wrong in my head for like 3 years. Okay.
All right.
That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. So we are hanging out with Adrian, who is running for what position now?
I'm running for the Attorney General of California.
Right. So we are very excited to have you. Thank you for hanging out with us. Can we talk about what you're running for, what you'll be doing, what your platform is?
Absolutely. So, for a little background on me, just to explain what kind of perspective I come from, I was a public defender in one of the more conservative counties in California, and I've been a criminal defense attorney. I'm in private practice now. What I would bring is the perspective of the Attorney General's office is supposed to control all law enforcement in the state of California. It's all the DA's offices, all the police departments. And I think that's been a major gap in pretty much every attorney general in California and probably a lot of attorney generals across the country. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as you're well aware, prosecutors or police are out of control. My platform is basically to fill that gap, to rein in prosecutorial and police misconduct. And one of the stats that I think I tweeted and I put on my Facebook page is from this website, Mapping Police Violence. Mm-hmm. And it breaks it down by state, by race, by whether or not victims were armed or unarmed. And from just an 18-month period, from January 2016 to June 2017 alone, over 250 people have been killed by police, and mm-hmm. not one of them has been charged with anything, not even perjury. So, you know, I could be open to believing that some of them, probably minority, are justified, but it can't be all of them.
Right.
It can't be all of them, that none of those police officers committed a crime. And I can't think of any reason, as a criminal lawyer, a police officer kills somebody who's unarmed. How could there be no crime committed mm-hmm. if somebody just walks away from that? So I don't think that police departments should be, I mean, that's 250 reasons why right there, why I'm running. I don't think that police departments should be investigating themselves. I don't think that local DA's offices should be investigating what sometimes are their friends. And if not friends, people who are police officers who are testifying for them in just other kinds of trials, helping with their conviction staff. Even if there's not an actual conflict of interest, the potentials are always there. So the Attorney General's office should be independently investigating and prosecuting when there's enough evidence. And it's a very low standard to bring criminal charges. I mean, you know, it's there shouldn't be such a big divide between when police officers kill people and when, you know, if you or I killed somebody.
Right.
We can't just walk away from that. So that's one thing. And I think that DA's offices need to be overhauled. They need to be audited and reviewed. And look at all these problems with the way cases are prosecuted, really across the country, but this is just California. Mm-hmm. For decades, there have been you know, well, the, you know, we know that the entire criminal justice system is has a lot of pervasive racism. Mm-hmm. It goes back not just decades, but hundreds of years. You know, one of my favorite books is The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander.
Yes, great
book. It really goes through that history and, you know, shows that line from slavery to Jim Crow to the current prison system. And, you know, it's not an accident that there's this racial bias. And some of it is perpetuated not by necessarily individuals making a decision, but if you look at, you know, every stage from policing to sentencing, communities of color are over-policed. You know, white people are more likely to carry drugs, but we are not arrested and investigated for those crimes mm-hmm. the way black and Latino people are. Mm-hmm. So it's drug policy and not the drugs themselves that is just ruining the lives of people of color at a disproportionate rate than white people. So, but also when you look at, you know, DA's offices, they're, whether they individuals do it consciously or not, black and Latino people, other people of color, are more likely to go to prison than be released on probation. They're more likely to be charged with strike offenses and not strike offenses. Right. So we need to review, just look at the records of all these DA's offices, and if you're giving better offers to white people across the board, just stop it. That's something that just needs, we need to put the brakes on that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a jarring experience for me because I'm white and I don't have, it's not something I've dealt with personally, at least the first 22 years of my life. But right. When I first walked into a courtroom where there was felony sentencing, and it was all black people, just, you know, handcuffed and chained together with the chains across the stomach. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't want to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. I want to be a part of an office that corrects this, not keeps perpetuating it. Because if there wasn't racial discrimination, you would see a majority or a proportionate amount of white people
right.
in prison, not a majority black, but it's a minority of the population. And, you know, that reminds me of another statistic that's mm-hmm. been on my mind a lot, is that black people are 14% of the U.S. population, but 43% of the death row population.
Right.
And I still practice in Riverside County, which is the county in California where the DAs seek the death penalty the most out of any county in California.
Oh, okay.
And as Attorney General, I can't repeal the death penalty. That's not something I can do. Mm-hmm. But controlling all the DA's offices, I can put a moratorium on it. And there are other things I want to stop, too, because we just shouldn't be oppressing communities like this, and we shouldn't, as a side issue, we shouldn't be wasting money on it. I'm going to issue a moratorium on the death penalty, on nonviolence, drug offenses, no more gang injunctions, which is a civil lawsuit that we can talk about that later if you want, but that DA's mm-hmm. issue against people who are suspected of being current or former gang members, and no more of these ridiculous prosecutions of people doing things just by virtue of being homeless, like sleeping outside or possessing right. a shopping cart. And that's, you know, I've handled those cases, and it's just, I think if most people knew what DA spent their time and money on, I don't think they'd be happy about it. I mean, that's not what we see on Law and Order, but there's a ridiculous amount of waste that goes into just grinding poor people and people of color into the ground. Mm-hmm. And so we just need to stop it.
I find it fascinating listening to your platform and your ideas. You are like the complete opposite of Kamala Harris, it sounds like.
You know, it's... Yeah, it's and she has stepped down or stepped up, depending on which way you look at going.
Yes.
One of my opponents is the incumbent, Javier Becerra. Mm-hmm. He took her place. But mentioning Kamala Harris, there was a case where a DA investigator, and this is, you can find news stories about this if you Google, you know, jail snitch scandal, Orange County. Mm-hmm. There was a conspiracy. The background is there was a conspiracy of putting these informants in people's jail cells after they were represented by an attorney, totally unconstitutional, getting these extracted confessions from them, mm-hmm. hiding evidence from defense attorneys. And it goes back, this collusion between the DA's office and the sheriff's department in Orange County goes back as far as 85.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So all these convictions are being reviewed, but it's on, you know, those people and defense attorneys. You know, I know somebody who worked on a case, and it's still going, but the guy's out on bond. He was in prison for 18 years mm-hmm. on one of these snitch cases. And he was punched in the face by a DA investigator in what? The Orange County Courthouse. And, you know, I'm not saying anything that's not public record, because that's one of the things you'll find if you Google it, Orange County snitch scandal or... I don't know, courthouse attack.
Okay.
The OC register a lot. And Kamala Harris, so...
Which, just...
This
just,
DA investigator was angry at this defense attorney who happened to be one of the lawyers who got one of their clients out of prison based on all this prosecutorial misconduct. And he just came up from behind and pummeled this guy. And, you know, he was all bloody and... A juror took a picture of his blood splatter in the hallway, and that guy didn't stop punching the defense attorney until a deputy pulled him off, and he just walked out.
That is what I did not know. Y'all, courtrooms are like that.
You know, if I laid hands on a prosecutor in court, there's no way. There's no way I would walk out of there.
Right.
And it was... You know, and there were independent witnesses who said what happened, and Kamala, it was referred to the Attorney General's office then under Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. and she declined to prosecute, saying that it was because there were conflicting witness statements, because there were some people in the DA's office who said that the defense attorney was the aggressor, started it. But that doesn't stop prosecutors from prosecuting any other case.
Right, exactly.
All witnesses say different things. All right, well, you know, one person only had injuries to his fist. But that's, you know, that's one example of, you know, because that is law enforcement, a DA investigator, mm-hmm. just getting this free pass. And frankly, you know, doing that in a courthouse and just walking out, and there's never any criminal consequence. I mean, that's kind of a chilling message to everybody in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, defendants, defense attorneys, like, that's what an employee of the DA's office can just do to you, and he's not even arrested, and is still, I don't know if he's still there today, but he worked there for a while. After that, there's no consequences.
Yeah, that's actually quite terrifying to know that they have that sort of ability to terrorize civilians. Like, that's actually quite disturbing. You know, and the reason that I dislike Kamala because of her stance on sex workers, but also just the general idea of hard, you know, tough on crime sort of attitude that seems really, really pervasive, even among people on the left, even among Democrats, because we know that these policies don't work. Right? All they do is use up resources, cost money, ruin lives. This whole, you know, being excessively tough on crime is just not the way to go. So how would you be able to help influence that to take a less lesser approach toward put everybody in jail as long as possible? So how can you help with that if you're Attorney General?
Yeah, I think we should look at the sentences that we're giving people, again, with the racial disparity of that. Uh-huh. But there are some things that people just should not be in prison for or in jail for in general, like drug offenses. So I would, controlling the DA's offices, I would tell them to stop doing that. But they can be, you know, what we need is decarceration. You know, there's been studies shown that incarcerating people is more... I've heard the term criminogenic, that it creates crime because people come out of prison and they have less choices. They have a felony conviction that's really hard to get rid of once you've been in prison, especially. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't want to paint a broad stroke, but sometimes, well, no, always, there are much less choices of how somebody survives when they get out. But, you know, back to people being in prison who shouldn't be there to begin with, if we are taking money and energy and time that these DAs are spending on pursuing weak cases, pursuing cases where they're slapping gang enhancements on people when there's very little evidence of it. And, you know, there's a lot of things with you know, gang enhancements, gang injunctions, that's punishing people for association. And, you know, sorry, I'm a little all over the place, but there are just so many things that we have set in place that just keep people going through this revolving door of jails and prisons. And can I just talk about gang injunctions for a second? It's, you know, there's this civil lawsuit that DAs will issue against anybody who comes under, who's been identified as a gang member. But it's a very loose definition, and it's what's been decided on by police officers. So people don't even know that they're documented as a gang member in some police department's book of gang members. If anybody's done a field interview or been near a gang member or is related to a gang member. But once there is a gang injunction prohibiting people from associating with others, from even wearing certain colors, you know, it can lead to multiple arrests. And there was a lawsuit that the ACLU brought against the LA DA's office that is making them, you know, rework how they're doing their gang injunction. I don't think we should be doing it at all. Because it strikes me as too similar to black coats, too similar to just targeting groups of black and Latino people, getting too many people wrapped up in that. And it just seems like it doesn't pass any smell test of being constitutional. I think it's straight a little bit for your question, but I think we need to be going away from these policies that put people into jail and prison, and we can be diverting that time into doing other things. Like, there are DA's offices, I know in other states, that have wrongful conviction units, where their job is to review cases where they've put people in prison and they really shouldn't have. And you know what? That should be on them. And not the people they put in prison, the people they victimize, to figure out a legal way to get out. There are, you know, I don't know the exact number, but there are, there has to be some number of people in California who are still in jail and prison for offenses related to marijuana that are legal now. But they should be released automatically. There should be, you know, if DAs aren't tied up with, you know, these stupid petty cases with, like, you know, the racially biased ones, the gang enhancement cases, the homeless, the drug offenses, stop pursuing the death penalty, just stop, you know, doing these things that don't make us any safer. In fact, the opposite, and devote your time into what the law says is that a prosecutor's role should be to seek justice and not convictions. I wish I had the exact quote, but there's a case that says that. And unfortunately, most DA's offices are set up where promotions are based on conviction rates. So that's the exact opposite. So you have these young DAs who will take anything to trial because they want to make probation, they want to get promoted, and that's not even playing by the rules that we're supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, just seek justice instead of doing that. Get the people out of prison jail that shouldn't be there, and just, you know, eliminate, or, you know, I mean, it can't happen overnight because it's been in place for so long, but start to eliminate these racial biases and these prosecutions that we just should not be spending time and money on.
Mm-hmm. So, as this goes on, how do you think your policies would be viewed by other people in the criminal justice system? Do you anticipate getting tons of pushback for these ideas?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I have these, I know other defense attorneys who like my ideas.
Okay.
I would hope that there are some prosecutors who I think took that job for the right reason, and who do want to seek justice, and I would hope that they would appreciate having the discretion to dismiss cases where they should,
mm-hmm.
and not be judged on how many people they can lock up or get convicted on cases where they shouldn't be pursuing them.
So
that would be my hope. But, you know, for so long, law enforcement has had this carte blanche to just, you know, run roughshod over people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, whenever there's somebody saying something different, there's going to be some pushback. Obviously, I'm not the first one.
mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm never going to say that I'm as important as a social movement. You know, we need to, you know, be following the lead of movements like Black Lives Matter, of just like taking the call seriously,
mm-hmm.
to stop racist police violence.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think one thing that me running can hopefully show is that, you know, I am a socialist, but these are not radical ideas.
Right.
Just, you know, have policies that don't, that aren't just incarcerating us into oblivion, that mm-hmm. That are making us less safe. You know, while it's you know, affecting people of color a lot more, everybody should be alarmed at the rate that police officers are killing people.
Absolutely.
Nobody's safe.
Absolutely.
And nobody's 100% safe when there's this, because it sends a strong message to police when we can go two whole years killing people and nobody's charged with anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know, I think that's one of the points of even the phrase Black Lives Matter, is that police and, you know, I really hate the Blue Lives Matter thing, which is, of course, such an insult to Black Lives Matter, but we already know they matter. That's
right.
The whole point is that if they can kill people and get away with it, then they obviously think, and because they've been told by having no consequences, that their lives do matter more
exactly.
than other people.
Exactly.
And that can't, I mean, it's just, it's so wrong, and it's not something that can be allowed to continue any longer.
So now, do you have any ideas for how to interact with the public? Because I think a lot of people don't really understand the inner workings of the criminal justice system. So all they hear is arrests went up or the prison population went up, and they're automatically like, awesome, that means we're safer. But a higher prison population does not necessarily equate to community safety. Do you have any ideas on how to help educate the public with that, or how to reframe the thinking?
I think a lot of the public doesn't really need a lawyer telling them that things are really bad. I think a lot of people know that. But, you know, statistics are when they're presented that way, are misleading, because the reality is violent crime from civilians, not from police, is down. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if people just looked at it a different way and looked at what people are in prison for,
right,
and that people are getting such long sentences, and, you know, and that that prosecutors are the most powerful people in the criminal justice system. I mean, if somebody, we're getting to the point where a lot of people know somebody who has been involved in the criminal justice or injustice system somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's becoming more in public consciousness that there's something very wrong, that there's something that, you know, we're supposed to have purposes of sentencing other than punishment, but that's all we do in this country is just punish. And it's, you know, there's practically no rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are very simple things that I think a lot of people agree with. Like, you know, when I'm gathering signatures because the filing fee just to run is $3,401.60. It's a really weird number.
That is a weird number.
But if I get 7,000 signatures by February 7, that's waived. If I get less, it's reduced. You know, it's very difficult for third parties to run.
Right.
You know, the Peace and Freedom Party doesn't have that kind of money. It's certainly not for every candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I talk to people and I ask them if they'd like to sign, you know, registered voters in California to get me 48.5943 cents closer to filing fee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I'll just tell them, like, did you know that it's been over 250 people killed by police in this period of time and not one of them's charged? Maybe I'm not talking to the right people, because I don't usually approach police officers with this, but I've never had anybody say, wow, that's great. You know, like,
right.
nobody I've talked to likes that.
Well, I like
and
your, I really like your framing of that.
I think the idea that there's something wrong, but when you look at the numbers and you know, in 2017, over 1,000 people were killed by police nationwide,
mm-hmm.
and it's 1% or less than 1% of all those police officers were charged with anything. And you know, it's going to be even less who actually have charges stick or do any time. And the last time in California, an officer was charged for killing somebody was in 2015, and he went to prison for 5 years.
Mm.
So, I think that's something that's just so common sense that most reasonable people, you know, connect with that. They don't like that reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's the power and the impunity that police have. That's not something that people want to hear if they want to live in any kind of safe community. And, you know, and I don't want to live in a world where there's such a racial divide, and it's almost like there's an unofficial apartheid system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I live in the same world, but at the same time, I don't.
Right.
You know, I'm white. I've refused police officers coming into a house party, for example. I've not consented to searches, and they weren't, you know, super nice about it. But I don't walk around with the fear that that myself and my family members are going to, you know, be killed at any time. And, you know, another statistic from that mapping police violence is that of the racial breakdown of people who are killed by police, Black people who are killed by police officers are less likely to be a suspect of a crime, of any crime. So, you know, I would like that to sink in for everybody who has this racist notion that, oh, well, if they just weren't causing trouble or, you know, things like that, that you always hear these police apologists say, it's like, well, actually, they're not doing anything at all except existing while Black. And, you know, so what does that mean? That it's more safe to be a white person who is armed or is a suspect of a crime, which also is not a reason to be shot and killed. We're not supposed to be executed summarily.
Absolutely. I agree.
But I don't want, you know, that's not the kind of a world I want to live in. I don't, you know, nobody should want to tolerate that. So if I can be in a position to change that, I want to start changing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, tell me about the party that you're running with.
Yeah, so Peace and Freedom, I think it originated in 1968. It's an explicitly socialist party. And, yeah, we just think it's very important to have a leftist and socialist alternative to the Democrats and the Republicans, obviously, but... The Democrats have proven to not be any kind of opposition. I think we've seen that very clearly the past couple of years. And, you know, like you were saying, I mean, even the Democratic Party is, you know, tough on crime. They usually support the death penalty. That's just unacceptable. So we need something independent of that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. That sounds awesome. I'm actually going to research more about this party. I'm really interested now. So, see, sometimes I wish I was in California so I could hang out with all the homies and do this like kind of political activism. I love this shit. It's really good. All right. So now the idea is to decarcerate. The idea is to create programs to help divert people away from prison. And then you had mentioned we could also put programs in place to go back and look at cases and see if people have been improperly convicted. So that's what you're gonna do. I'm actually like, this is really cool to me because like I know you followed our podcast and we've interacted on social media and I know like you're a general leftist, but it's really awesome to know somebody's actually running for an office who's talking about this like progressive shit. Like, no, this is a very serious issue. I actually want to fix the problem. So seriously, all the props to you for this. I'm absolutely loving this conversation. But so now, is Attorney General, is that a position where you have influence over police? Is it possible for you to suggest like different training protocols or some sort of reform to encourage police to be less violent? Is that like on the table?
I'm glad you brought that up. That's an excellent point. So it is a position that is supposed to control all the law enforcement in California. So there is a lot more training that police officers receive on, for example, firearms than how to de-escalate a violent situation. So that needs to change. And really, I mean, I think across the board, if the police officers get the message that there will be some consequence for shooting an unarmed person, because I think, you know, some of these videos that you see with police officers shooting and killing somebody, I mean, a lot of times, obviously, you know, it's become just a joke that, oh, I was scared, oh, I saw him reaching for a gun. Sometimes, you know, it looks like the officer might actually be scared. And that's not an excuse, but I think them knowing the reality that it's so unlikely that they will be charged, and even if they are, it's so unlikely that, you know, it'll stick, and they're more likely to be charged with manslaughter instead of murder, or serve less time and sometimes go to prison and still get out and get a pension, which how many prisoners can say that? There's less of an incentive for them to, you know, stop and think, should I really kill this person? If, you know, it's a very unique position they have in a society where they're walking around and, you know, with a somewhat dangerous job. The most dangerous thing, I think, is when they're at traffic stops and actually be hitting, getting hit by cars. It's certainly not the most dangerous job in America. But it's more dangerous to be around a police officer because they know that they can put their lives above other people. If they are scared for their life in a second, and they have that freedom, if you will, or they feel it, to quickly react and protect their life above everybody else. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's the natural consequence of them not receiving any consequences for killing people. So there should be more training on de-escalation, about stopping and thinking, and that the people around them, you know, are not less important than their own protection, and even their own comfort sometimes. If you see how quickly they react in some of these situations when there's no evidence that there's a threat.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I would be very curious to see if police actually start facing consequences, how that would have an impact in a few years as far as, you know, police brutality and police shooting civilians and shit like that. Like, I would be very, very interested to see how that would, you know, how those numbers would change.
Yeah, I would too. And, you know, I mean, certainly a number that would change would be, you know, it can't be, like I was saying before, it can't be zero of the over 250 that were justified. It can't be.
Right.
So that's the number that would change if the Attorney General's office is independently reviewing these cases and saying, hey, there's enough evidence to charge this person with murder. And we've been talking about police killings, but there are so many other things that police officers do that are wrong, that are crimes or misconduct, you know, and it spans a wide spectrum from perjury all the way to rape and murder. But, you know, that needs to be taken seriously too. There's too much, you know, prosecutors will, you know, look at police reports and take police testimony as gospel. Well, you know, it can really ruin somebody's life.
Right.
If they lie about something that's even a small detail, you know, and every defense attorney has seen this a lot, you know, whether it's, you know, lying about somebody's window being up or, you know, whether or not they were detained, then you know, lose emotion and somebody's convicted. And sometimes, you know, police officers will just make outrageous testimony. And everybody but the defense attorney and the defendant act like, he just pretends like it's believable. Like, you know, there's a camera showing what happened in a police encounter, and the police report will say something totally different. And I'm not joking, the police officer will testify with a straight face, oh, well, all that happened before the camera was running.
Wow. Like, so they're not even trying to pretend. Okay.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. If we're going to have body cams, it can't be at the discretion of the officer. Just turn it on the whole time. And if an officer is, you know, doing their job correctly and not committing misconduct, you would think they would want the camera. You would think that they would want to be able to, you know, if they're worried about people making false claims,
right,
that, well, the camera protects you then. It protects everybody. And, you know, we have these cases where police officers are sued for civil rights violations successfully, you know, brutality, and, you know, a lot of, sometimes they'll settle, it'll be, you know, that's win, lose, or draw. It's taxpayers who are paying for that.
Right.
It's, you know, police unions will foot outrageous bills. When a police department is sued in a civil rights lawsuit, the city is usually sued as well. And a lot of those officers go right back out on the force. Why would we do that? Well, you know, so, and again, it's this disconnect between police officers and the rules the rest of us are supposed to follow. I mean, can you imagine, you know, being sued for something and your employer paying hundreds of thousands of dollars and you just keep going to work and you don't pay any of that? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that does seem a little outrageous.
You know, at least they should be fired. It's like, hey, you cost the city $200,000 because you tortured this black couple with a taser. I don't think you should be a police officer anymore.
Right.
I mean, I think if people knew to the extent that that happens and it's not publicized in the media, I mean, even, you know, even the side issue of maybe conservatives don't want their money spent like that, I think if people knew that that was happening so often, they would be upset about it. And again, it seems like such a no-brainer. If you do something like that, as a police officer, you're sued, it settles, you lose, this shows you're a danger to the community and you're a liability. There's no reason you should stay in the police department anymore.
Do you know, is there anybody who's tracking that sort of thing? I'm not really sure how it works in California. Like, I know in the city of Chicago, they've been tracking that. I think since 2003, they've paid out like $800 million. And I mean, literally almost a billion, $800 million for like wrongful death suits, police brutality suits, you know, that sort of thing. Is someone tracking that in California as well? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question.
Because
I know that the police killing people, there was not very good data collected, and it's been these independent watchdog groups, like The Guardian published, you know, the counting, and then there was the Mapping Police Violence website I keep mentioning. So that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, because I
should research that.
Yeah, I'm curious now because, like, you brought up a very good point of saying, like, yeah, you know, we might hear about it if a police officer shoots someone or kills someone or, you know, like in Chicago, we had John Burge. They framed hundreds of people, so it was a very notable case. But, you know, how often do we hear about cases where, you know, a cop, you know, hits someone across the face with a nightstick or slams someone face into a wall, and it's, you know, it's a $100,000 lawsuit, not, you know, a $20 million lawsuit and nobody died. I'm really curious now. I bet there's a lot of those that the average person doesn't know about. Yeah.
Exactly. Just like there's more killings we don't hear about, I think you're right, but there's way more of those incidents where it settles and it's sort of quiet and it never makes the news.
Wow.
But the police officers are still on the job.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. That's not right.
So, like, I don't know, like, how far the Attorney General's powers, like, go, but I, you know, was reading an article about different departments in California. They kept records of police that have fucked up on the job, basically. Like, let's just be honest. And, you know, they've planted evidence, or they've lied, or they've filed false reports, or put, like, lies, intentional lies in the reports and things like that. And these departments have a running list of who does it, and these people are all still on the force. They're all still working because I guess we can't fire them. But if you were Attorney General, would you be able to get your hands onto those kind of files and maybe work on some charges being brought up? Is that something that you can do?
Well, I think we can look back at some of these cases and look at complaints and look at these cases where people have been cleared. Like, at least, you know, I think with a priority on police officers who have killed people, with a priority on unarmed people and looking at those and I don't believe there is a statute of limitations on murder.
Right.
That should be reviewed, especially for the recent cases of killings of unarmed people. And in terms of, you know, personnel files and internal affairs keeps, I think there is too much. I think they're too secretive.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, I don't, I'm not totally close to the idea. I'm not, I don't know if I'm ready to say publicly, but I want those, all those files to be public. Maybe they should. But at least to, and again, I have this perspective of a defense attorney, is that you suspect that this is a cop who's committed misconduct, and it is very difficult to get prior complaints against police officers. And we have this terrible system in California where you have to file what's called a pitches motion. And, you know, it's long and convoluted, and mm-hmm. I don't like doing it. I mean, I do them, but, you know, it's not fun. And you get to court, and you have to allege that there's some misconduct you suspect the officer of and is relevant to your case. You file, you know, you get to court, you have the hearing, and the judge will sometimes grant it and say, yeah, you know, you met this threshold. Let's look in the personnel file and see if there's a complaint that's relevant to your case. Mm-hmm. And the defense attorney isn't allowed to look at it. There's a closed session with the judge and the lawyer of the police department and sometimes their custodian of records. And a lot of times it's happened to me is I file one of those motions, it gets granted, and they come out after half an hour and say, oh, yeah, we looked and there's nothing relevant. You know, I don't think we should have to go through this process. Police officers should at least share that information mm-hmm. about complaints that have been made against their officers, the entire personnel file, with the DA's office. Every time somebody is charged on a case, that should be known. You shouldn't have to jump through hoops to get it. You shouldn't be sometimes denied access to information where a judge and the police officer's lawyer decided a complaint wasn't relevant. And by the way, we don't even get the complaints. What we get is contact information for the person who made the complaint. So we have to hunt that person down and say, mm-hmm. what did this officer do to you? So that's, you know, if somebody's charged with a crime, uh-huh. and this is an officer where there have been complaints made against them for dishonesty, for false arrest, for brutality, they should just get that information. That should be, if it goes to trial, that should be something the jury gets to hear. It shouldn't be so difficult. There shouldn't be all these barriers for that information. And, you know, I apologize, you know, talking about this in terms of, you know, the legal system and how it works in criminal court. That's just...
No, this is actually really... I'm actually tweeting things as you're saying them because I'm learning a lot right now. This is really good.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think a common theme of this conversation is just police officers just, and it's just so common sense, I'm laughing a little bit, but I mean, they have way too much power and there's too much secrecy about complaints. And, you know, we're talking with just the pitches process and getting information about complaints of misconduct in court. I mean, those are complaints that made it in. If you think about all the times that people are intimidated out of making complaints, it never makes it into the file. I mean, sometimes an officer who has, you know, committed acts of misconduct, whether it's perjury or brutality or excessive force, they might have very little complaints or no complaints that made it into the personnel file. And by the way, just, you know, at least I'm only licensed in California. You know, mm-hmm. I can't give legal advice. But, you know, if I have a complaint against an officer, I would, and I've done this, I would send a letter to the Internal Affairs Division this is just general information, not legal advice.
Got it.
What I've done is just, you know, looked up police departments and looked up, they usually have an address in their internal affairs. I just sent a letter, you know, this person falsely arrested somebody. This officer, you know, you can make complaints about anything that you think is misconduct, perjury in traffic court. So in California, when you make that complaint, there's always a chance that in the next 5 years, a defense attorney will call you and say, hey, what happened?
Okay. So now, I guess this is one of the tough questions is, so we obviously need more transparency and honesty in the system. How do we make sure that happens? Like, how do you keep your people on the up and up, if you will?
Yeah, I think putting new policies in place that put the general community of California above the interests of law enforcement, above this, this relentless goal of just packing our prisons. And you know, California's prison system is so bloated that the federal judiciary, you know, ordered California to start letting prisoners out. There was this Assembly Bill 109. So because it's become such a problem in California that even, you know, federal courts have told us you have to start letting people out of your prisons. So starting from there, we want to put people over this system of control and retribution and punishment, and start there. And I know I'm being a little redundant, but just the bullet points of, you know, having consequences for police officers who betray that, who kill people with no justification, who commit brutality, who commit perjury over and over again. That we need a system in place that says that's not going to be tolerated anymore. You actually can't keep your job. If you do that, and you should be prosecuted if you commit crimes against the community. And in DA's offices, a shift away from the racial bias and starting to address that. But going to stopping these prosecutions that just shouldn't be happening. And there should be, I think they have some problems because, I don't think that they should be used as an excuse to charge people with more things. But there are good aspects of treatment courts, mental health court, drug treatment court. Of course, I don't think we have a need for drug treatment court if we're not prosecuting people for nonviolent drug offenses, which, like I said before, I can't change the laws of Attorney General, but controlling all the DA's offices, I can issue a moratorium. No more death penalties, no more of these drug convictions. We don't need to be doing that.
That sounds amazing. I'm so excited. Like, I really, really hope you win because I am just fucking down for all these policy changes that you're talking about and all these ideas. I saw on your Twitter you had mentioned, and you mentioned it too while we were talking here, that you need more signatures to help lower the cost for you to run, which was an obscene amount of money. So how can we help with that? Can you give us your information so people can...
I just set up a campaign account, I will be setting up a way to fundraise online soon, so I would hope that you just, I'll definitely tag you in things.
Yes, tag me.
So keep your eyes peeled for that. I will be starting to fundraise soon. I should have been doing it yesterday. But also, people in California, Registered voters are not, but registered voters are who I can get signatures from.
Okay.
But go to my Facebook page. It's Adrienne Bershawi for Attorney General. My email address is there. ADRIANE4AG@gmail.com. If you want to help with the campaign, especially if you're in California, you want to help gather signatures, you know, it's a very short period, just a couple weeks till February 7th. We need to get that in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just getting the word out about me. If people want to go to the Facebook page and Twitter, just, you know, share it. I'll be putting more content up.
Well, you know what we did? We cross-posted your page to our platform, to the Social Dissonance page, and then we cross-posted it to the WineCellarMedia.com website. And then we put it on Twitter. Like while you were doing this, I was doing that. And then what else folks can do, if you're on the Facebooks, this is something you can do. You can go in the search bar on Facebook and you can type in friends in California, mm-hmm. and it'll narrow your friends list down to people in California. Then you can share Adrienne Bershawi's campaign and tag them in it. So you like, and we want everybody's support, but need those California voters.
Yeah. Also, where are you at in California? If somebody does want to help with more hands-on things, where can they find you, like city-wise?
City-wise, I'm mostly in San Bernardino, but you know, okay. I did post an event on January 24. I'll be at the one of the other places I practice and still do sometimes. I'll be in downtown San Diego at that downtown courthouse.
Okay.
So January 24, I'll be at the main courthouse, the criminal courthouse in downtown San Diego, and I'll be collecting signatures, hopefully from people in line waiting at the court, and anybody who's interested in supporting, getting me closer to meeting that deadline for getting the filing fee waived. I don't think those lines for misdemeanors and tickets should be so long.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. I'm sold. Yes. Okay. So we have all your information. We will keep spreading it around. There is the Facebook page. There is the Twitter at Adrienne4C_. Wow. Check me out with words. I'm awesome. Let me try that again. That was at Adrienne. You have me so messed up on trying to say her name, man.
Yeah.
I really want to say Adriani, and I know that is not...
Yep, I was saying it very wrong. I have said Adrienne Bracciali on the program so many times.
Right.
It's terrible. Horrible. So Adrienne Bracciali.
Adrienne Bracciali.
Yeah.
At Adrienne4CA_AG. I will be tweeting about this. We're going to be sharing it on Facebook, and I'm definitely going to share it with some California folks, and hopefully some folks are nearby and can do a little hands-on work with you. That'll be awesome. You said January 24th you'll be in San Diego?
Yes, I will.
Okay, excellent. All right, so yeah, we're going to do that. Thank you for hanging out with us. I appreciate everything you said. That was really fucking dope. You brought a lot of information to us, so.
Yeah, this went long enough.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and I love your show.
Thank you. Yeah, this is going to be the entire episode. We're just going to do maybe a trigger warning and an intro, and that's about it, because we have talked for almost an hour.
Yeah.
So, no, that... was amazing. That was incredibly insightful, and I think that the listeners are really going to be feeling it. So thank you very much for coming on. Best of luck with running. We'll do everything we can to help you out with that.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And let me know if anything else I can do to support the show. I'll share it around too.
Hell absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Peace.
Great. Thank
Have
you.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Damn. I was like, I don't know if there's going to be enough to talk about to make, a really good segment. Nigga.
Yep, yeah, I thought we were going to get, 20 minutes in, but whole episode. So, damn, I just need to slide the music under it, which we get to take a break then, and then we'll do Wine Cellar After Dark and fuck around with some social justice bullies ideas. And,
yes.
Yeah, just make more content in general, and then I'm back to the work week on Sunday. All right. Have a good one.